I'm just trying to make my mama proud.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at redrock_beeble. I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, so check out my work over there. Today, we're going to be recapping Monday's 7 games. We're going to be previewing Tuesday's 8-game slate, and we're going to be shining the player spotlight on the Cleveland Cavaliers' new starting center, and that is Larry Nance Jr. So, Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. The monstrous line of the night goes to Hassan Whiteside of the Miami Heat. 24-14 for Whiteside. 2 assists, 2 steals, and 3 blocks. He was 10 of 13 from the field and 4 of 5 from the free throw line. It's been a bit of a disappointment from Whiteside this year, mainly because his minutes have gone from 33 down to just 26 minutes per game, averaging 14 and 12. The blocks have dropped down to 1.7 per game, although on a per 36-minute basis, they're the same as they were last year. His scoring and rebounding is actually up per 36 based on last season as well. But what has also dipped is his efficiency from the field, down to 55%. 56 the year before that, 61 the year before that, 63 the year before that. So a continual downward trend in his field goal percentage, but at least his free throw percentage is going up while the field goal percentage goes down. He was at 50 in his first year, 65, then 63, and then 69% this season.
Giggity!
From the line. Whiteside, part of the reason why he has been a disappointment is the minutes, and I don't think that's going to change. This was a great performance from him, but he's still only played 25 minutes in this game, 25 minutes in the previous game, and 19 the game before that. He obviously hit his shots at a great rate, 77%. The previous game, he took 10 shots and only hit 2 of them, so a little bit up and down with that field goal percentage. The arrival of Bam Adebayo, the play of Kelly Olynyk, and the fact that Eric Spoelstra doesn't really trust Hassan Whiteside, and I can understand why that's the case. Whiteside has his deficiencies as a defender in terms of getting out away from the rim, and that causes problems in the new modern NBA as opposed to 2 years ago when things were a little bit different, and that's as quickly as stuff changes in the NBA. So don't expect his minutes to go back up. He can be a real negative offensively as well. He can't shoot clearly. Adebayo can, Olynyk can. He has been a black hole in terms of passing wise, averaging under 1 assist per game this year. He's gotten a little bit better in that area, but still obviously not an elite passer as a center. So that can be a problem offensively and defensively. He causes issues, and that's why he doesn't stay on the court big minutes. He's going to be in that 40 to 70 range as we move forward. But getting back to that, yeah, in his 15-16 season, he was the 13th ranked player in fantasy. He's never getting back to that because he's not blocking 3.7 shots per game. He's probably not shooting over 60% from the field, and he's not playing those minutes that he's played in the previous 2 seasons. But for now, you just have to deal with the ups and the downs. You have to take that risk in terms of him with DFS as well. It's just not going to be consistent, and the minutes aren't going to be consistently high. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Bojan Bogdanović of the Indiana Pacers, 29-4 with 3 assists, 2 steals, and 5 triples for Bojan Bogdanović. He was 6 of 8 from the line. He has been absolutely electric, and you're going to want to sit down. Maybe you're already sitting down, but when I looked at what his ranking was over the last month, I was stunned. Now, it's smaller sample size because of the All-Star break in the middle there, but he is the 36th ranked player over the last month, averaging 19.5 points with 2.7 triples, shooting 54% from the field and 90% from the line on 4.5 attempts. His 2 strongest fantasy categories over that month are his percentages, and this is something I do talk about a bit, is when you see small sample size ranking anomalies, a lot of the time, whether they're really high up or really low, it's to do with percentages, and that's the case here with Bogdanović. For the season, his free throw percentage is still his number one fantasy asset, but his field goal percentage is his third highest stat. But for now, it's way up there as the second best number, and at a significantly higher Z score for the year. He's at 0.16 over the last month, 1.34. So it just shows you how fantastic that jump from 48 to 54% is. Plus, he's also upped his usage in that time. He's shooting 51% from three in those 11 games, so they are numbers which I don't expect to continue. And he's also at 4.5 free throw attempts, up from 2.7. And when you're hitting 90% from the line, that additional almost two free throws a game is a huge, huge boost. It's almost triple the value of his free throw percentage category in the last month as opposed to season long. And I expect both of those numbers and 3-point percentage, if you want to include that, those numbers to drop back off. For now, you probably have to own him, but do it in the on the basis of getting points and getting threes and have the expectation that the free throw percentage will dip and the field goal percentage will dip and the points output won't be at 20 per game with over 2.5 threes, maybe down to 14 or 13 per game as a more realistic expectation. But again, no doubting he has been fantastic, and part of the reason that the Pacers are playing as well as they are continue to really strive forward and push for amazingly home court advantage in the NBA playoffs. The young gun of the night goes to Denzel the Hammer Valentine of the Chicago Bulls. 20 points with 5 rebounds and 2 assists. He hit 4 triples. He had 2 steals and a block, and he was 7 of 11 from the field and hit both of his free throws. You would have heard me speak, if you were a long-time listener to this podcast, around draft time last year about how Valentine was one of those players who projected out to have the best fantasy value on a per-minute basis. In a very similar vein to a guy like John Collins or Zach Collins this season, is that the way their numbers project out, everything looked nice. It's just about getting them that playing time. And it's been an up-and-down battle for the Hammer this season. I would have hoped that they could have given him a starting role as they continue to shuffle this lineup, but no, David Nwaba is going to start the next 5. But the Hammer's minutes are up. He played 29 in this one. He played 30 for 2 consecutive games prior to that game against Dallas, and 28 the game before that. And we're seeing him stuff the stat sheet. In the past 4 games, he has registered 25-2 with 2 steals and a block, 7-3-2 with a steal, not so good there, but 14-6-4 with a steal, 11-13-3 with a steal. So we're getting contributions in multiple categories. And sometimes, yeah, he doesn't shoot the ball that well, but over the last couple of weeks, he's inside the top 110. He's providing little bits of value in multiple different areas. And I feel good that he's going to get mid to high 20s in minutes moving forward. Now, that doesn't make him a must-own guy. It makes him an interesting, hey, let's see if I'm in a 14-team league, I'd add him. In a 12-team league, it depends who else is around and what sort of stats I need, but getting a rebound assist steal combo with a guy that can hit 2 threes per game, if you don't have too much concern about your field goal percentage, the Hammer's an interesting guy here because I don't think that his minutes are going really anywhere. Hopefully they decide to give him a little bit of an expanded role and see what he can do because his game is very fantasy friendly. He's hitting 38% of his threes this year, which is a huge considering he was at just 35 last year, and he came in from college as a very good three-point shooter, and that's translated here finally in his second season, very reminiscent of what Doug McDermott did in his time in Chicago with shithouse in the first year. And then we saw his college three-point confidence come through, and we're seeing that with the Hammer at the moment. So he is your young gun of the night. Dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. We're staying in Chicago because Zach LaVine was terrible. 4 points, 0 rebounds, 1 assist, 3 steals is the only saving grace, but 1 of 11 from the field, 2 of 4 from the free throw line. That is putrid. Someone asked me, lots of people asked me, to be honest, is he going to be a top 40 guy this year? I said, you know what, I reckon that's probably pushing it. I was more worried about the minutes, but his minutes have ramped up fine. He's averaging over 32 minutes per game over the last 5 games, but he is just not that good. He is shooting 36% from the field in that time, 39% over the course of the season. He's averaging 17 points with 3 rebounds and 4.4 assists in his last 5 games, a steal per game. But it's just the subpar shooting, and that is a very common thing with post-ACL players, is that the shooting suffers, the defense suffers. He has been abominable on that end. And he is really starting to struggle at the moment. The usage is down for LaVine. The percentages are down. His rebounding, which started off the season very strong, has dipped there as well. And I don't ever think that he is going to be a top a top 50 player on a consistent base, or maybe a top 40 player. I think he can be solid enough, but he is really struggling with the extra attention, with the recovery from the knee injury. It hasn't been a great run for Levine at this point. You're not dropping him at the moment, but he is, again, comfortably outside the top 100 in rankings for fantasy so far, and that's clearly not a great sign at this point. Hopefully for Bulls fans and for himself, he can turn that around, but it hasn't been fantastic from him of recent times. Just really monitor, because once, and this is a common thing, once you get into fantasy playoffs, like, he's continuing to hurt you and you need that field goal percentage, I wouldn't be too scared to drop him in the right sort of circumstance. But you have to be really calculating in the sort of moves that you make and the way that you view your matchup against your opponent. You have to make that decision, and you have to see, is he hurting myself more than he's helping me? And then if you go through and have a look at that, you might be able to make that decision and move on, because that is a definite possibility with the way that Levine is currently going about his business. Let's go into these games now. We will break them down in a bit more detail, have a check on what actually happened across the NBA on Monday. The first game, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Indiana Pacers. The Bucks are struggling. They are 2-6 in their last 8 games, really on a downward slide. And this is a key battle for them against a team who they are battling for playoff seeding with. Adetokounmpo had 18 and 12. He had 2 steals and 5 blocks, so obviously fantastic there, while Bledsoe had 26, 3 and 4 with 2 steals and a block. But we're still getting a ton of minutes from Jason Terry. 21 minutes for Terry, 9 points, 2 assists, and a steal. Shot the ball well, but I just feel like you can't be a winning team if Jason Terry is getting big minutes. I tell you who else is shit. Tony Snell, 26 minutes for him, 9 points, all from 3. He just doesn't do enough. He does nothing for us fantasy-wise, but I just don't think that he is a positive player. And yes, the Bucks are missing Malcolm Brogdon. They're missing Matty Dellavedova. And when those two guys come back, I think that Snell is at real risk of playing under 20 minutes per night when those two players return. Without Tyler Zeller, Thon McCur was forced into a larger role. He struggled. He has had a terrible season as well. 0-4 with 3 steals. Maybe he can still get better. He's still allegedly young. That's a bit unfair to him. He's still young. It's only his second season in the NBA, but he is just not strong enough. His hands are piss poor. He can't really do anything unless he's playing the Raptors for some bizarre reason. And he has been overtaken by Tyler Zeller. The Muppet John Henson, 26 minutes, 2-5 with a block. It wasn't a good game despite the extra minutes. He's got, again, real borderline value, but it's solidified more with Tyler Zeller missing. As for Jabari Parker, the minutes were up on a second night of a back-to-back. That's a positive. 24 minutes for 15 points, 5 rebounds. Defense absolutely atrocious. Didn't do too much else. The minutes prior to these last couple of back-to-backs, they had been surging up. We've seen them come back down in their next game. Does he go back to 27 or 28? Because if he does, then I feel strongly about a hold. If he goes back and starts playing 21 or 22, it's going to be... Because we've seen him push forward to 27 minutes, 28 minutes. If he doesn't get back to that, that's more of a coaching decision necessarily than a recovery, recuperation type decision, and that could be a real concern. Chris Middleton was bad. He was dealing with a sore knee. He had 6 points in 35 minutes. Onto the Pacers. We've talked about Boyan already. Thaddeus Young had 10 and 7, and he had the Richie Beno.
2 for 2, 2, 2.
2 steals, 2 blocks, and 2 triples for Thad. Lance Stevenson just shiploked his way all over the court. 19 minutes for Lance, 11, 3, and 4, a steal, a block, and 2 triples, and a deliberate trip of John Henson. I often say that people celebrate Lance Stevenson. I can't get behind it because he's a terrible person. He's just a shiploke. Why is he a shiploke? This is why he's a shiploke. He is not. It's not always a shiploke. Like, he has got multiple allegations and charges leveled against him: domestic violence, abuse, that sort of stuff. Not good stuff. Pushed his missus down the stairs at one point, allegedly. Not a good bloke. And that's why, look, he just does the dumbest shit, and we sell it. People celebrate. Oh, look what Lance said. Look at him. He is a A grade dickhead. And I cannot have him. Darren Collison out for the remainder of this week. Corey Joseph started 34 minutes, 6-5. The 3 steals are nice, but he is just not a high priority guy for me. He's a 14-team league player. Oladipo, 14-5-5, a triple one, but the efficiency was yuck. He was 5 of 19, and he had 10 turnovers as well. He had a 44 usage percent, which is out of control. I think we'll give him a pass on this game, though. Miles Turner struggled, 5-5, and Sabonis had 11-5. Turner still had a block, so something's still there for his owners, but it's been a disappointing year for him this year. Absolutely no doubt about that. The Detroit Pistons and the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Pistons got spanked. Blake Griffin only played 29 minutes because it was a spanking. 25-8-5, so he's been a little bit better in these previous two games, and that's a good sign for his owners. While Drummo had 15-9 with two steals and a block. Reggie Bullock, just a solid source of threes again. Three triples with 11 points, threw in two blocks just as a freebie. Don't expect that all that often. Well, Ish Smith, much like Corey Joseph, man, these are just borderline guys. 6-3-6 for Ish. Jim Ennis started, he played 28 minutes. Stan Johnson came off the bench, he played 28 minutes. Neither player did enough for me to say, yeah, you want them in 12 or probably even 14 team leagues. Luke Kennard was a DNP until the very end. He had 6 points in 5 minutes. Just the continual bafflement of Stan Van Gundy's coaching rotations. It just continues to push to the fore. I know that Pistons fans are fed up with this bullshit, with this team, and I'm sure the Pistons fans are nodding their head in agreement. On to the Cavs. LeBron, 31-7-7 with five triples on 65% shooting. He's pretty good.
LeBron James.
Laz Nance Jr., 32 minutes for Nance, 22-15 with two steals. We're going to talk about him later on in the player spotlight, but I think I'll leave it by saying that he is the Cleveland Cavaliers starting center for the rest of the season. I don't care when Tristan Thompson comes back. Larry Nance is that man. He needs to be owned in every league, unless your team is super strong, unless you're making the debate about do I drop... someone asked me, do I drop Aaron Gordon for him? Like, no. If that's your worst player, then no. You don't drop him for Larry Nance, but he needs to be owned. And you need to go and look. And if he's on your wire, grab him. See what other bullshit you got floating around there. Like, Willie Cauley-Stein? Yeah. Drop him. Scalabissier, fine. Get rid of him. Get Larry Nance. I can't think of any other names. The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman, fine. Yeah, the Baptist, John Collins, is an up and down one. I reckon I might have actually go for Nance. I like what Collins can do. I just don't have full faith in what Budenholzer is going to do in terms of jerking the playing time around. Nance, at least for the next 2 weeks, because Thompson's out there, it's going to get huge minutes. And then I think he remains as the starter and produces in 25 minutes and could be a top 60 type of player for this season. I know I said I wasn't going to talk about him, but there we go. Ante Zizic, 16 minutes, 6-6, a steal and a block. I was big on Zizic before the draft last year. He looked shit in summer league this year when he came over. We haven't seen him on the court really at all, but with no other centers on the roster, he is the guy that played all those backup center minutes, and he was actually pretty good. So that gives me a level of hope for him in dynasty leagues. I don't really see him ever being a 30-minute a night guy. A 24-minute Jonas Valanciunas type. Absolutely, I could see him being that guy, an 80 or 90 ranked player. It might require a change of scenery or a change in the players around him, but he showed a little bit in this game. Rocket Rodney Hood moved into the starting lineup. He had 13 points, replacing Jetty Osman, who went to the bench. Very little incentive, I think, to add Rocket in your 12-team formats. While Jordy Clarkson had 11-6 in 20 minutes, and Georgie Hill played 23 minutes because Jose Calderon was back in the point guard rotation. He played 16 minutes. I wouldn't expect that every night, but it just, again, another thing where you go, well, George Hill, look, you've got all these point guards, George Hill, Ish Smith, Corey Joseph, DJ Augustine. I reckon Augustine might even be the best bet out of that group of four back-end point guards at this point, and that is a very, very strange statement to say. The plummet, J.R. Smith, he had three assists. And that is it. And he played 22 minutes a year. His hot shooting has obviously abated. The Phoenix Suns and the Miami Heat. Josh Jackson remained on the bench and played 29 minutes and was bad. 3-7 with a three and an assist and a steal. 1-6 from the field. And that bloke who I'm sure is listening, who got my video and posted in the Suns Reddit about me saying why I'm not high on Josh Jackson being a star. This is why. Yeah, he has some good games, but he also has some bad games with some bad shooting and some bad decision-making. And him back on the bench, look, if you need to make moves to stream guys in, he's probably going to be your worst guy on the roster in the playoffs. You might have to move on. He was bludgeoning himself to some pretty big numbers and has taken significant steps forward in the 2018 portion of this year, but the last two games haven't been good and the decreased role is not ideal. 33 minutes for TJ Warren, 19-4. Booker had 31, 2-5 with four triples. Well, don't look now, but Marquese Chriss had two good games in a row. He actually played 27 minutes alongside Dragan Bender a lot of the time, 12-6 with two triples and a block. 14 teams, I'd go and add him. I'd put him well behind a Larry Nance in a 12-team league. But yeah, if those minutes trend up, and I say this all the time, I don't like him on court, big minutes, the production's coming. There's no doubt about it. Whereas Dragan Bender, big minutes, the production doesn't come. Tyson Chandler played 18 minutes, while Alex Len, who played 2 minutes in the game before, or yesterday's game, sorry, had just 7 points in 12 minutes with 5 rebounds. So at least he got more playing time, but you don't need anything to do with Alex Len in 12-team leagues, and to be honest, probably 14-teamers. Shit night from Lord Alfred. He had 9-5 with 24 minutes, but he has been good in his time in Phoenix. I'm not too concerned. For the Heat, look, it was a blowout, so minutes were spread all over the place. The Duke was out. Tyler Johnson was back. I can't believe that Luke Babbitt's playing 26 minutes a night. That's really going to be screwing up their rotations. We had 23 minutes for Scooter Magruder. So it's really hard to get a full gauge on what the Heat are doing here. Babbitt, 12 points, which all came from three. He's an interesting three-point stream. But when the Duke is back, does he even remain in the rotation? He started alongside Jim Johnson at power forward, and Johnson played only 21 minutes. He is not a 12-team league player. Justice Winslow, highest minute total on the team. 12-12, 5 assists and 4 steals. He's really coming into his own at the moment, and you could add him in 12-team leagues, but just with these guys, Winslow, Olynyk, Johnson, Magruder, Wade, Babbitt, Johnson, every Johnson under the sun, all these guys are cutting into each other's playing time, and it is a real concern. Joshy Richardson, 19 minutes, had some foul trouble. 12-4-2 with 2 triples. I'm not worried about his playing time. Wade had 12 there also. Well, Bam Adebayo, only the 5 minutes. This is why he's not a standard league guy, because there's just too many options there, and he is most of the time going to be the third string guy. Olynyk was strong, 15-4-8 with 2 steals. You know I like him. You know I like that he can, what he can do fantasy-wise, but again, he only played 20 minutes. There's just too many guys in that mix there. The Boston Celtics and the Chicago Bulls, just an absolutely putrid start to this game for the Bulls.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again.
I haven't played that one for a while because the Bulls actually got competitive. They were uncompetitive in this game. We'll talk about the Celtics side first. There was no Kyrie Irving. So Shane Larkin was the surprise starter. He only played 16 minutes and had 9 points, but hit 3 threes, had 4 assists and had 2 steals, and didn't miss any of those shots. He only took 3 shots. All of them were from 3, and he hit them all. This sort of production is unlikely to continue, but he can be a steal streamer. The guy you want to go and add, though, is Terry Rozier, who played 32 minutes and had 13, 3, and 7. Give him the minutes, the production will come, and the minutes are going to be here. There is a chance Irving misses the rest of this week. Jaylen Brown, 21-4-3. Recently, his free throw percentage is way up. There was a nice article about him on NBA.com/Celtics talking about how he was overthinking things. And this is one of the criticisms about Brown that came into the draft, is that he was so smart that he outthought himself, and he overthought things so much of the time that it got into his own head, and that's what he reckons is happening with his free throws, but he's fixed it up. And recently, we're talking about 70+, which was really keeping him below that top 100 rank. So nice numbers there. Jason Tatum, only 20 minutes, 14-5 with 2 triples and a block. The production's not too bad there from Tatum, but the minutes are a concern. We've seen them trending down, and I think he is on the bubble in 12-team leagues. Smart had 7-2-4, and Morris was a disappointing 7-5 in 22, and he is not a standard league guy. Well, Al Horford, the people who wanted to drop Al Horford, you don't drop Al Horford. 13-7 with a triple one and 2 assists in only 22 minutes. That's back in business for Horford. On to the Bulls. Talked about a couple of those guys already. Let's talk with talk about PunchBob Shiploke, who started at center, had 27 minutes, 7-6 with no other numbers. He is not a good player. I will continue to say this. He is a horrendous defender. He is a selfish offensive player. He does not pass, and he shot the ball poorly here. He just jacks shots willy-nilly. I think you still have to own him, though, but he's just not good. It's as straightforward as that. He'll be much better than this moving forward, but this is a real string of piss-poor games from Portis, apart from one interesting one in the middle that is, should have you a little bit worried. Cameron Payne, my boy, is he coming good? 20 minutes, 10 points, 2 threes, 3 steals, and 2 assists. I love those numbers. I like them. I think that's useful. You're in a 20-teamer, an 18-teamer, maybe a 16-teamer. You have a look at him. He's not going to start starting over Chris Dunham playing 30 a night, but a point guard who plays 20 minutes a night and gets steals and hits threes and get you 4 assists, there's something there. There's some value there. Chris Felizio moved to the bench, did 8-5. That's very little. Larry Markkinen had 12-4. I remember people telling me that he was, you know, just this absolute star, and I think he played well, but man, there are hot rookie takes at the start of the year. Just hot. Larry Markkinen, the best player in the Jimmy Butler trade, was one I got multiple times. David Nwaba, 10-3-3 with two steals. He's never going to be a high scorer. You're getting him for some defensive numbers and high field goal percentage. And when that doesn't occur, he can be a tough guy to keep on your roster. I still think you probably want to own him in 12s, but wasn't a great night for the Bulls in general. The Memphis Grizzlies and the San Antonio Spurs, it looked like the Spurs were going to lose to the Grizzlies, which would have been an absolute disaster because they're struggling at the moment. They got the victory barely. The Grizzlies were without Mario Chalmers and Andy Harrison, who are both out a minimum of a week. Chalmers is going to be reevaluated in a week, and Harrison's out 1-2 with that wrist issue. So that opens up some value there. Jarrell Martin and Tyreke Evans also missed this game. So what we saw was another big game from Jermichael Green. He had 14-15 with 5 assists and 2 blocks. He hit 2 threes as well. Now, I dug through some stats on Jermichael because someone tweeted at me, why do you hate him? What do you got against him? Just admit you were wrong on him. And look, I admit that he is playing very, very well at the moment. I still don't think that he's an excellent prospect. I don't think that he is this long-term solution. There are a few things that are really going in his favor. You should probably add him now. It's hard to ignore that. He should be added. But he played 33 minutes a night without Jarrell Martin. Now, when Jarrell Martin comes back, who had been getting equal or slightly fewer minutes, these guys are going to play a power forward and a bit of center. But you've also got Marc Gasol. You've also got Deontay Davis. So there's your four big men there already. There's Ivan Rabb in the mix. Is he in there too? Is Green going to be able to play 34 or 35 minutes a night? My initial thing is no. Can he play at some small forward? Then yeah, sure he can. But Chandler Parsons is now back. Now he does get a reprieve with Chalmers and Andy Harrison being out. That takes some minutes off the wing. It pushes Tyreke when he eventually comes back more to point guard. And Ben McLemore was also out of this one with personal issues. So when those guys are back, then Dylan Brooks plays more at the three, and it limits what Green can do at the three. So when everyone's back and healthy, he's not going to be able to play 30 minutes per night, but he's also going through a real hot streak. I did talk about him in the player spotlight yesterday, but I wanted to highlight this, is that he's blocked 6 shots in the last 3 games, 2 in each game. In his previous 39 games, he'd blocked 12 shots. So we can see the real standout there. He's had 12 assists in his past 2 games. In his previous 40 games, he had 48 assists. So we're talking about numbers which are just mind-bogglingly good, but absolutely don't fit in with anything that he has done in his career. He has always been a lower percentile block percentage guy as a big. He's a very, very good rebounder. He is not a good shooter. He is not a good defensive stats guy. He is not a good passer, but that has really ticked up in these last couple of games. So expect a regression, but ride it while it's happening. Kobe Simmons made his first start, 13-4-3 with a 1-1. With Harrison and Chalmers out for the next week or two, then there is something there for Simmons. He's more of a 14-16 team league guy because he split the minutes equally in this one with Xavier. I don't even know how this guy's name is pronounced, to be honest. Xavier Rathen-Mays, who played today because the Grizzlies played him legitimately in a jersey that did not have a name on it. That is how unprepared they were for this guy. Xavier Rathen-Mays played 26 and had 8-2-5 with 2 steals. 20 teamers, 30 teamers. Rathen-Mays is a guy you can add, and Simmons in shallower formats there. Dylan Brooks, 21 points in 35 minutes, 17 shots, shot the ball efficiently, didn't do too much, really just a deeper league guy, while Wayne Seldon, Deontay Davis, and Chandler Parsons were all back in action and didn't do very much there at all. Get the question a lot, should I drop Tyreke Evans? And I can't just say yes or no, because there are many factors. Is it your playoffs? Are you the one seed and got a huge advantage over the 6th seed or whoever your playoffs are going down? Are you going to win that comfortably? Someone said, should I drop Tyreke? My playoffs start March 19th. Why would you drop him now? He might be back by then. But then if you're in the 7th seed and 6th team makes the playoffs, you might have to drop him to get that win to get into the playoffs. So there's very different scenarios, but he's currently, they've ruled Chalmers out for a week. They've ruled Harrison out for 1-2. They said Tyreke is day to day. So he could be back and marginally less than certain that he will play this season. I don't think this is a case of him not playing again. And I would expect him back across the weekend would be my guess with Tyreke. Onto the Spurs, LaMarcus Aldridge returned, wasn't great, 7-8 on 8 shots in 31 minutes. Kyle Anderson was good though, one of the passes of the year as well. 11-2-4 with 5 steals. Just solid numbers. Continues to put up solid numbers. No upside really, but just solid numbers. Rudy Gay had a burst eardrum. 14 minutes for him. 7-4 with a steal. Not a 12-teamer. Barely a 14-team league player in my mind. While Pau Gasol hurt his shoulder, had 2 7-4 with 2 steals and 2 blocks, but is unlikely to play against the Warriors. So that could open up our Davis Bertans, who had 17 in 19 minutes. He was almost out of the rotation, but has crept his way back in and can be a 3-point streamer when the Spurs play next. DeJounte Murray struggled, and Tony Parker was fantastic. That's why the minutes distribution's that way. 26 to Parker and 18 to Murray. Parker had 23 points with 4 rebounds. Didn't hit a single 3, just basically hit every single 2 he took. I wouldn't be making any moves based on the distribution of minutes in this game or the level of play of these guys. The Orlando Magic and the Utah Jazz, big win for the Jazz. Yeah, Nick Vucevic was strong, 15-12 with 3 threes. Well, DJ August in another solid game. 10 points, 2 triples, 5 assists and a steal. Makes you want to consider owning him. We had a change at halftime with the starters. John Simmons started the first half and my man John Isaac started the second half. 29 minutes for Simmons. He had 4, 1, and 2. Don't go near him in 12s. He's a borderline 14 team league guy. My boy Johnny Simmons, Johnny Isaac, 18 minutes, scoreless, missed all 5 shots, but 2 steals, 2 blocks, and this is why he is going to be a top 100 player. Not this season, in the next 2 years, because he can give you 1.5 threes, 1.5 blocks, 1.2 steals per game. He can score a bit. He's a very, very good rebounder as well. He is going to be putting up huge fantasy numbers at some point, I believe. I really do value Isaac, and the fact that they threw him out there to start, to go and guard, yeah, Joe Ingles, who was on fire and basically shut Ingles out of the game in the second half, was a huge effort from Isaac. I really like what he can do, and I think he's going to have a strong second half. You're not adding him in 12s or even really 14s at this point, but strong game. Mario Hezonja played 20 minutes, had 10 points with 2 steals. I think you can move on from him. While As Gordon was shithouse, 13 points on 18 shots. He was 22% from the field. Just not a good night, while Fournier had 12 points on his own 4 of 18 shooting nights. So just shitful shooting from the Magic all around. On to the Jazz. Ingles, 18, 7, and 8. 4 triples, 3 steals, 1 block. He was so close to the monstrous line of the night. I really wanted him to get there, but he just wasn't quite. That is fantastic. He needs to be owned everywhere. While Rudy Gobert, 21 and 17, a steal and 2 blocks, continues his excellent run. Ravishing Rick Rubio had 12, 4, and 8, while Jonas Jerebko, who started in place of Derek Favors, who was missing with the neck spasms, 12 points with 3 triples. Nice numbers, but this is not going to be a long-term thing. The Don struggled with his shot, 38%, but had 19, 5, and 4 with a triple one. Another big performance from Don Mitchell. Well, Jay Crowder, this was Cleveland Jay Crowder, 1 of 9 for 4 points with nothing else. Leave him for the 14 or 16 team league formats. The last game of the night, the Portland Trailblazers and the Los Angeles Lakers. Damian Lillard was out of control. Just 4 late threes in this game to get the Blazers. I was watching this game and the Lakers were up by 10, went and did a walk for like a minute outside, stretched my legs, came back in, and the Blazers were in front because Lillard had gone bananas. He was dropping bombs from half court. It was craziness. 39, 5, and 6 with 6 triples continues to be absolutely excellent. If only he would give you 2 steals per game, he would be like a top 4 fantasy guy, I reckon. Yusuf Nurkic was good, 16 and 16. He's always going to be up and downs, and we know that. With Mo Harkless out, Shabazz Napier got big minutes, 7 and 5, actually added in 2 blocks with a steal. As long as Harkless is out, Napier can have some 12-team value, but I wouldn't be rushing to grab him. Let's go to Eddie Davis. Only 16 minutes for Eddie, while Zachy Collins only played the 9. Struggle street for those two guys. Well, the Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
5 and 7 with 2 steals for Aminu on 2 of 9 shooting. Specialist only, really more a 14-team league player. On to the Lakers, Julius Randle. This guy is crushing it at the moment. I admit, I did not think he could be as good as he has been. I thought he was going to be limited with other players in the front court and with his own limitations. But he has been excellent this season. And recently, over the last week, he's the 16th ranked player, mainly because he's shooting 89% from the line on 9.3 attempts. And that free throw percentage is by far the best category that he offers, with field goal percentage a close second. but putting up numbers the last month, 20 and 8 he is averaging with 4 assists on 58 and 73. So big numbers, but always the big drawback with Randle is the defensive numbers. 0.8 steals, 0.8 blocks. He's never going to be getting big numbers in those categories. But offensively, he's been on fire. The efficiency is well up. He was a 49% shooter last year. He's at 56 this season. Can't hit threes to save himself. And he's seen his assist dip, but just an offensive powerhouse. It's pretty much unstoppable at times for this team. So great stuff from Randle. Brook Lopez, 14-8 with 2 steals and 2 blocks. A strong game from Brook, where Ivica Zubats had 7-4 in his 16. Lonzo Ball, not his best night. Did hit a late 3, had 10 points with 3 triples, 2 assists and 2 steals. But if he gets his normal rebounding and steal numbers, rebounding and assist numbers, then he is well up again with a top 30 type production. He had 10-2-2 with 3 threes and 2 steals, but if he instead goes 10-6-8 with 2 steals and 3 triples, then it's a perfectly fine line. Just for some reason, the rebounds and assists weren't there. Isaiah Thomas was brutal. 19 points, especially in the fourth quarter. 19 points is good. 7 assists is good. 24% is not so good. Just some bad turnovers and plays down the end of the game for Isaiah Thomas. Of course, though, he still needs to be owned. While the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, played 38 minutes, starting at small forward. 11 points, 8 rebounds, 2 triples, a steal, and 2 blocks. This is the player that I thought he would be coming out of Utah. Not this insanely hot preseason and first 2 months of the season guy. None of it made sense with what we'd seen from him, and we are seeing significant regression from Kyle Kuzma. And even though I preached it time and time again at the start of the year, I was doubting it myself. Oh, maybe he's just a 15% better shooter now in the NBA all of a sudden. Further back line, harder opponents, but somehow significantly better because it kept going and kept going and kept going. But no, eventually common sense does kick in, and that's what we're seeing here with Kyle Kuzma. If you're in a deep league, Travis Weir is probably on your wire, 20-teamer, 30-teamer. No other small forwards on this roster with Ingram out a week. He had 5-6 with 3 blocks in 16 minutes. You take a look at him in that sort of a scenario. And that does it for all of the games from Monday's slate of action. Let's go to the player spotlight, a player we've talked about a little bit already, probably a little bit more than I wanted to earlier on, and that is Larry Nance Jr. of the Cleveland Cavaliers, obviously formerly of the Los Angeles Lakers. He is the new starting center for the Cleveland Cavaliers, and Cleveland beat reporters are saying that while Ty Lue won't say it publicly, he will be the starter for the rest of the season. He has won that job. It's been clear he's been so much better than Tristan Thompson since arriving in Cleveland. He has chemistry with LeBron already, probably the number one factor you need to succeed in Cleveland. Kevin Love's still a ways away from returning. Nance is going to be that guy. The one thing that's going to hold him back is fouls. Now, he got away with it in today's game, only 2 fouls, but in his previous 6 games, he accumulated 4 fouls in 5 of those games, and that really limited his minutes. But he has been obviously really, really fantastic since arriving in Cleveland. He's played 9 games for the Cavs so far this season and put up 9 games, but this basketball reference hasn't updated its numbers. But in that time in Cleveland, he's averaging over 10 points per game. He's pulling down rebounds. He gets over a steal a game, over a block a game, and his efficiency is absolutely through the roof. In the last 7 games, he's averaging 12-8, 1.4 steals, 1.1 blocks, 64-80. The 80%, I'm a little bit dicey on that sticking because he is just 66% for the season. But last season, he shot 74%, so no reason he can't be up that high. He is, as I said earlier, a must-own player. I think he's got a legitimate chance to, from here on out, be a top 60 player. Maybe even higher. He's the 49th ranked player over the last 2 weeks while only averaging 12 points because of that elite field goal percentage. And while I talk about field goal percentage anomalies and how you can't trust them, it's only 4% higher than his season number. And if you can't rationalize to yourself that playing with LeBron James can give you a boost of 4% in your field goal percentage, then you haven't watched LeBron James play. Nance can do that if he can keep his free throws up. Steals and blocks, high rebounds, high efficiency scoring needs to be owned. The numbers might not look sexy, but for fantasy, they are very, very sexy. What does this mean for Nance as we move forward? He's just turned 25, so he does have improvement in him. He's obviously still going to be in Cleveland next year in his fourth season, so room to improve. He's claiming that he's, you know, starting to work on that 3-point shot. Now, he'd want to do better than he has so far. He's at 17% and he hasn't hit one at all in his time in Cleveland. He's a career 23% shooter, but he can get to 33%. Then there's definitely some value there in a guy like Nance putting up, you know, really consistent top 100 numbers. I think he should be able to keep himself above Tristan Thompson in the rotation for, you know, the remainder of this season. I would say almost definitely next season as well. And he's going to be able to, you know, really be one of those nice under-the-radar fantasy guys. Just has to keep the fouls under control. That is the real problem for him. And that's what's, you know, gonna, that's the only thing that's going to keep him away from top 60 value is fouling. So we'll see how that actually, how that goes for him as this season progresses. In terms of his advanced numbers, his PER for Cleveland's through the roof, 24. Over 20 for the season, big true shooting, well above league average, win shares per 48, out of the arse, through the roof, defensive box score plus minus, massive, box score plus minus, massive, and when players put up these sort of advanced stats in their third season, you can feel pretty good that they're going to be able to be relatively consistent contributors and potentially work themselves into being not necessarily stars, but yeah, very, very, very good starters, and I think that's what Nance can become. The Cavs are 13.6 points per 100 possessions better with him on the court, which is an astounding number. It is minuscule. We're talking under 200 minutes. But that is a huge, huge number. He's been a positive every season in the NBA, apart from this one where he's at negative 0.6, but that'll be eclipsed really, really soon by his time in Cleveland and how well he is playing. He, advanced numbers love him. I like watching him on the court. He's a big, aggressive guy who can block shots, who can finish well, and I'm super pumped about what Nance can do, and I do really think that we're going to see him be underdrafted in fantasy drafts next year. Obviously, plenty of water to go under the bridge, but I feel good about him being a top 100 guy next season and probably the year after that as well. So that is Larry Nance Jr. of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Let's go to the perfect DFS lineups. On FanDuel, Eric Bledsoe, 45.5, and Dame Lillard, 53.3. They're your point guards. At shooting guards, the Don, Donovan Mitchell, had 36.1, and CJ McCollum, I've got him down here at 98.5. He did not have 98.5. I think he had 48.5. Justice Winslow had 49. Joe Ingles had 34.1. They're your small forwards. Larry Nance, 39.8, and Kelly Olynyk had 42.4, while Hassan Whiteside had 72.9 for a total of 399.3, and that cost $59,900. On DraftKings, Dame Lillard had 54, Jingle and Joe had 47.75, Justice Winslow 43.5, Jermichael Green 44.25, Kelly Olynyk 37.5, Bojan Bogdanovic 45, Larry Nance Jr. 47.75, and Hassan Whiteside 55.5 for a grand total of 375.25, and that cost $49,500. All right. Let's move into this 8-game slate that we have got for the Tuesday action in the NBA. First game we're going to have a look at is Ben Simmons and his Instagram game going up against the Charlotte Hornets. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go and check. I'll check it on Twitter. I'm sure you will find it, Ben Simmons' Instagram. Really, really playing some nice game on the gram, as the kids would say. The Sixers are favored by 1.5 points. The total is 215 in this one. Injury-wise, unless you give a shit about Justin Anderson or Dwayne Bacon, we're pretty clear in this one. At point guard, Kemba Walker's at 8,100. I feel pretty good that you're going to get 40 from Kemba, and that makes him a nice cash play. He's also got some upside there. I also like going the other way with Ben Simmons, but he is a power forward for some reason, still on FanDuel. Then you got Timothy John McConnell. I don't think there's much point going that way. JJ Redick's at 4,900. Has been okay lately. I think there's limited upside and a bit of a shaky floor, so that's a fade. Well, Nick Batum at 7,300. I think that Batum can push towards 34 or 35. Can he get higher than that? Yeah, he can. I would look more tournament-y for Batum rather than cash. Ballinelli at 3,900. Yeah, probably just not enough playing time. At small forward, Kid Gilchrist, fade. Jeremy Lamb, 4,700. I think that's tournament only, and I don't feel super good about that. While Bob Cove's up to 5,500, because these numbers have started to come back, but I'm still not ready to go cash there. And I think even tournaments, it's not going to be the best option. At power forward, Marvin Williams, he averages 12 points over the last three and 15 over the last five, so you can do clearly better than that. Well, Benny Simmons at 88, I'm all about Simmons here, really putting up the good numbers, unless he was able to track down that Instagram model's hotel room. Dario Saric at 6,900. I think that's probably a little bit too high for Saric there. He's been good, but he's more a 62 than a 6,900 sort of a guy. Frank the Tank Kaminsky's at 4,400. I would definitely use him over Marvin. I would use him over Kid Gilchrist, but I would only do it in GPP settings. At center, Cody Zeller's a minimum salary guy. No, Marvin Williams. Joel Embiid at 10,300. The Dwight Howard matchup can be a concern, but centers have put up monster numbers against the Hornets lately, so really tough to go past Embiid. Well, Dwight, I'm a little bit concerned about the motivation for Howard here. 7,400 was piss poor in his last game. It's been pretty shit the last couple, to be honest. 7,400 here. Yeah, tournament, if anything, and I don't really feel super strongly about that either. Over on DraftKings, I think Covington at 49 is a strong tournament play, while Embiid, Simmons, and Walker, as they are on FanDuel, come in pretty good for cash and for tournament options. Dwight at 6,700 is clearly in play just because of how cheap that salary is. Saric at 63 is also pretty close to being a guy that you can use in cash, I believe. We go on to the next game now. We've got the Miami Heat. We've got the Washington Wizards. The Wizards are favored by 5 points. The total is 204, the lowest total of the day. Kelly Oubre has been upgraded to probable with that sore left foot, while the Duke, Wayne Ellington, is questionable after missing today's game. If the Duke gets back in that rotation, the Heat players are going to be absolutely all over the place in terms of playing time. The Iron Shoulder, Goran Dragic, 6,900. Bad matchup, high price. No, not for me. Tyler Johnson at $5,000. I'm not sure how much he'll play, only 18 in his return game today, but I think there's some GPP value there in Johnson, because if they start him and give him big minutes, he can smash through that, but the confidence in it's low. While Tomas Satoransky is down to $5,600 on a string of really poor performances from Thomas. Bad matchup as well. I think we can go a different direction. At shooting guard, Brad Beal, 8,500, continues to crank out, you know, decently big numbers the majority of the time, but I feel like that might be a bit high on FanDuel. Some other sites where he's lower, I'm all about it. We know the usage is going to be there, so tournaments are fine. I just don't feel super strong with his cash value. Wade, Ellington, Meeks, no thanks. Kelly Oubre Jr., 5,300. No way you can use him in cash, but you could consider for tournaments. Well, Justice Winslow has been cranking it. He had 44 today, averaging 31 over his last five, and at 4,300, give me 31. I'm pretty happy with it. It's all Dutch Rudders and Rusty Trombones. But with everyone else around, how are the minutes going to play out for Winslow? He's far from what you can call a consistent or reliable player, and the playing time's a little bit that way too. So I think it's an excellent tournament play, but that's about it. Otto Porter, 76, bang that in cash and feel pretty good about it. It's going to make me look stupid now that I said it, but I really do like this one for cash. Joshie Richardson at 64, I think you can find better options. At power forward, Markeith's at 5,500. I'm in on using Markeith at that price. I think that he's got 35-point upside. I think he's got probably 25-point floor, which is pretty good at that price. It's a cheap amount for a starting power forward who should see decent minutes. Jim Johnson, Kelly Olynyk, probably not. Mike Scott, Bam Adebayo, Luke Babbitt, yeah, probably not. Center, Hassan Whiteside, 7,200. The matchup does favor Whiteside here. He averages 46 against the Wizards and Marcin Gortat, Jan Mahinmi combination at center. I think that he is a tournament play, but shit, I would not feel any confidence in going with Whiteside in cash. I just don't have confidence in those minutes. While Marcin Gortat, 4,100, too high. He's just not good anymore. While Mahinmi at 3,800, there's very, very little upside, I believe, in good old Jan. On to the DraftKings side of things. Otto Porter at 7,200. I'm in on that. While Satoransky at 52, I think, is a tournament option. Beal at 87 is even worse position on DraftKings than FanDuel. Whiteside at 69.
Giggity!
That is definitely a tournament play, and a really strong tournament play. And not much else super appealing there. Markeith at 54 is all right. Justice Winslow at 42. The same sort of concerns creep in, but he's been obviously smashing that value in recent times. The next game we take a look at, the Atlanta Hawks and the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors favored by 13, the total 218. This is going to be a smashing, but there's something I've sort of noticed with what the Hawks have been doing. They've got their players, their Schroeders, their Bazemores, their Baptists, Undertakers. When they're against a team where they're going to get beaten no matter what, they play them decent minutes. When it's against a shitter team where they've got a chance of winning, you'll see Schroeder's minutes come down. You'll see Bazemore rest. You'll see the Undertaker or the Baptist pulled off
giggity,
so that Miles Plumlee can come in. This is not one of those cases. They're going to get pumped no matter what. So I think we get Schroeder push his minutes back up. I think we get Undertaker and the Baptist push their minutes back up. Bazemore will be back. I think we get lots of the artists formerly known as Taurean Prince. Are the Hawks the team with the most nicknames? Are they going to be pretty close? So I think there's that opportunity. On the other side, this is a perfect opportunity for the Raptors bench. Pascal Siakam, Jakob Poeltl, Freddie VanVleet, for these guys to get extra playing time as well. In the last game, there was no Bazemore. Isaiah Taylor was ejected. They should be fine, but Malcolm Delaney is out. So there is some extra minutes available there for Taylor, who when Delaney was out a week or so ago, he was putting up big numbers on a consistent basis. At point guard, Fred VanVleet, 4,800. This is the perfect opportunity for him to give you 27 or 28 just because of the blowout nature. Don't use it in cash, but it's a great matchup, great upside, big opportunity for VanVleet here. Kyle Lowry at 77, that is fade territory. He could easily come out playing 24 minutes while Tyler Dorsey at minimum salary. Strong game from Dorsey in that last game starting for Bazemore, but that won't be the case here. While Schroeder is at 7,100, I think that Dennis Schroeder has absolutely got 40-point upside here. But I don't feel super confident about the minutes, but I think that's a great opportunity, so I like him. And Isaiah Taylor at 39 is a tournament play as well, but you wouldn't play him and Schroeder together pretty obviously. At shooting guard, DeRozan at 82. The matchup means I fade that, while Bazemore at 5,400 has really stunk against Toronto, averages just 16 points over his last three games. His last game before he was rested, because, man, he must be so tired, 38 points in 32 minutes. At 5,400, he is a tournament guy, but it is a really bad matchup for him. CJ Miles, a minimum salary guy, I have no interest in that at all, while the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, he's at 5,600. His lowest score in the last five games is 27, which is well above the price for the value for 5,600. So, yeah, why not? The problem is this matchup's a real tough one. The Raptors really shut down opposition wings to a huge, huge amount, and that's a concern with Prince, but I don't think that you should be overly concerned about deploying him here considering that price isn't that high. The Jedi, OG Anunoby.
Hello there.
He's been ruled out. Maybe Norm Powell starts. Maybe it's Malcolm Miller. One thing I'm pretty certain about is you shouldn't give a shit about either of those guys for DFS purposes. At power forward, the Baptist at 6,200. It is a high price, but in tournaments, I think he can get a 40. I think that's a possibility. A 35 is more reasonable. Cash, probably not. Tournament, you know, there are probably better guys out there, but I think it's an opportunity for some bigger minutes. Ibaka's at 56. I don't like the minutes problem there. Well, Siakam at 47. I just don't think he's a really high fantasy point per minute sort of a guy that we're looking at. He is a point per minute sort of a player, but at point per minute, is he going to get the 26 minutes necessary to get to that right level? Probably not. At center, Valanciunas at 6,400. I think there's a real concern with minutes. Great matchup, but how is the playing time distributed? While Poeltl at 4,400 has got an opportunity to come out there and put up 30 points. So I think both of those guys, Valanciunas and Poeltl, can be tournament players. Let's crack on to DraftKings. Baptist at 5,800, VanVleet at 4,200, and Poeltl at 39. They're all tournament sort of guys with that upside for all those scenarios that I just mentioned. Formally is at 5,700, Taurean Prince. That while the matchup's negative, I think that's worth looking at. While Schroeder at 65 is a strong tournament play there also. While the Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman at 55, I just don't feel really good about using the Undertaker here. He's up and down, and I'd rather spend it on a guy like Poeltl or on John Collins. Huge, huge game here. The Houston Rockets winners are 15 straight going to Oklahoma City. The Rockets are favored by 4.5. We know the Thunder get themselves up for these games. The total is 222, one of the largest totals of the day. Melo missed the last game due to rest. He will be back. He'll probably be bad, but he'll be back. Westbrook, 11,500. Let's go. Point guards have had a real problem against the Rockets. Massive, massive negative in terms of their reads, but Westbrook averages 64 against them. He's almost immune to negative matchups. Well, no, not almost. He is immune to negative matchups. Go with him and feel pretty good about it. Chrissy Paul at 8,100. Not worried about Russ's defense. I just worry about the way that Paul is accumulating stats at the moment. It's not quite to that level. I think you can do better. Fat face Ray Felton, you can do better there, clearly. Jim Harden, 11-4. I'd take Westbrook over him, to be honest. Because if the Thunder are going to have to compete here, it's going to have to be all Westbrook. Harden's just going to do what he does. Like, he's still a really good cash option, but I would take Westbrook over him in this one here. Again, given their recent histories against these teams also. But Harden, of course, is still strong. Eric Gordon is at 5,400. He was monstrous in the last game, but I do not expect that to repeat. So that is a fade from me. At small forward, Paulie George, 8,600 for Georgie. I think it's okay. If you're building a lineup around him, he wouldn't be the first guy that I'd put in there in a tournament. I'm not sure the upside's really high enough. So I think he's, that's not true. The upside, he can put up big numbers. Will he do it in this game? I don't feel super great about it with Ariza, Marmute, Tucker, these sort of guys switching onto him. Speaking of Ariza, 5,200, I'd much prefer to spend that on him than spend that extra 3.5 on Paul George and feel good that I'm going to get 27 to 30 out of Ariza. I feel pretty confident about that, so I like him here. Tucker, Hustis, Gerald Green, Corey Brewer, just a murderer's row of nothingness in terms of fantasy ability. We've done the small forwards. Power forwards, Carmelo Anthony, $6,000, hasn't reached that threshold in the last five games, has really struggled. Negative matchup, you can leave me out of that. Ryan Anderson's out again with his injury problem. Jeremy Grant's at $4,000, I don't see much there. Luke Marmute, Pat Patterson, the same. Steve-O Adams at $7,000, I think that the matchup against Capella is not a bad one for him. He hasn't really taken full advantage of it before. 31 points across the last three games in 31 minutes. But if he gets 36 minutes here and puts up 36 points, I think that that's a possibility. So I would feel okay with using him in cash. As for Capella at 75, that's a real negative matchup for him against Adams. So I think we'll leave him alone on the sidelines. Let's go on to the DraftKings side. A lot of guys I like here. Ariza, Capella, Steve Adams, Jim Harden, Russ Westbrook. I think all of them are cash and tournament sort of players. Very similar distribution of salaries as it is on FanDuel. The Denver Nuggets and the Dallas Mavericks, rumors of a change to the Nuggets logo, getting rid of the light blue, going with a more darker blue and a burgundy color, reminiscent of those jerseys they had back in, I wish I could remember the years, after the rainbow jerseys, you know, the ones with the dark blue and the burgundy. I cannot think of what year that they were around here, but that is the rumor that they will be changing to that. Nuggets favored by 4.5. Total is 219. Wes Matthews missed the last game with a hip issue. He could be out again. If he is, expect more from Yogi Ferrell. Expect more from JJ Barea. But don't expect them to be, you know, awesome, awesome options. At point guard, Dennis Smith's at 6,700. He had 40 in the last game. The matchup is really, really favorable for him, but the shooting is what makes him a variable option and should push him more to tournaments rather than cash. Whereas on the other side, the blue arrow, Jamal Murray, he's got an excellent matchup against Smith, but at 6,900, I don't feel super confident in him getting to that level. So really just tournaments there as well. You got Yogi Ferrell, you got JJ Barea. I don't feel great about those guys. Their production has not been very good recently. At shooting guard, Wes Matthews at 4,900. We don't even know if he's going to play, but the main one I think people want to hear about, because they want to hear this drop.
Nice, Gary!
7,200 for Gaz Harris. He dropped 43 against the Cavs. He has done very well against the Mavericks in the past with a 41-point average. I don't think you should have any concerns with using him in cash. Devin Harris, Farton, Will Barton. Barton's at 7,900. I will take Gaz over him pretty much every day of the week. Barton is okay, but only be tournaments. I wouldn't feel safe in cash. At small forward, the pencil, Harrison Barnes, 6,200 for Barnesy. I actually think that getting 30 out of him feels like it's going to happen, so I think it's not a bad option to use him. While Baby Neck Wilson Chandler's at 5,400, the return of Paul Millsap has reduced his output. Dougie McDirt's at minimum salary for a reason. Dwight Powell at power forward, 5,700. The production has dipped a little bit from Powell, but I do think that he can give you, you know, high 20s and do it pretty consistently. So I'm okay with him. While Paul Millsap at 6,100, totally in on using Millsap here. cheap price, still coming back from the injury. Had 29 in 26 minutes in the last game. Probably going to hijack the offense again, but that's good for his DFS value. Dirk's at 58, and Dirk is averaging 30 over his last five, and I think you'd be a bit surprised to realize that. I just think the upside's low, and there's floor problems as well. Mason Plumlee, no thanks. Trey Lyles, Maxi Kleber, we don't even know if either of those guys will actually be in the rotation. At center, Nikola Jokic, 9,700 for Jokic. I cannot get behind it with Millsap there. It's been a rough couple of games. We'll see how it goes. I cannot get behind it. Well, Nerlens Noel's at 39. Probably not there, but if it is, it's just going to be for tournaments. On DraftKings, Jokic and Murray and Dirk are tournament options there. I think Dirk's not a bad DraftKings guy with the scoring system. Well, Dennis Smith at 6,600, I really like in cash. And Millsap at 58, I'm super strong on over on DraftKings. Let's go on to the next game now. We've got the New York Knicks and the Portland Trail Blazers. The Blazers favored by 9.5 coming off this back-to-back. The total is 215. Mo Harkless did not play today. If he is out, it's more minutes to Evan Turner, who will start, but more minutes go to Shabazz Napier with Pat, according to Reggie Miller, Connington, getting some extra playing time as well. And if you're unaware, I know that it's not Connington, but the man who is paid to broadcast nationally on NBA games does not know that the man's name is Connaughton and not Connington. So shout out to you, Reggie Miller. Shout out to Duncan Smith as well, the former host of Locked On Pistons, the writer for The Athletic Detroit now, who was called out by Isaiah Thomas today after Duncan said that Isaiah Thomas didn't know the salary cap. I actually tend to believe Duncan there, and Isaiah said he was making a joke when he said that the Pistons will be looking to land a big name free agent despite the fact that they're $20 million over the salary cap heading into next season. So I tend to think that Isaiah may not have understood how that worked, but I don't know. He claims he knows because he worked for 30 years in the NBA. Didn't do it well for his time when he wasn't in uniform, but that's enough of that. At point guard, Jeff Hornacek says he is sticking with Emmanuel Mudiay as his point guard because he is committed to losing. And Mudiay has been atrocious throughout his NBA career, atrocious in New York, but he does put up fantasy numbers. The problem is this is a negative matchup. He's a shit player. He's at 4,700, so maybe you could look at him as a tournament option, but that is really about it. He is really in the tank at the moment. Dame Lillard's at 9,700. He only needs to play for a quarter, pretty much, and he can get you 50. Dropped it today against the Lakers. While Frankie Ntilikina, the point guard they drafted and trying to turn into a shooting guard who they still can't give minutes to, he's at 3,700. I have very little hope there. Trey Burke at 55. If I'm going to use any of these guys, Mudiay, Ntilikina, or Burke, it's Burke, but just for GPPs. Well, Shabazz Napier at 43. I just think that price is a bit high, and I don't really think that there's supreme value in using him at that salary. At shooting guard, Tim Hardaway Jr. is at 6,200. He's the one Nick who's getting consistent minutes in big minutes. I think you can feel good about getting 28 to 32 out of him around that range as a decent floor, and that's not bad for cash at that price. Christian James McCollum at 7,800. It's a pretty high price for CJ there. It's a great matchup. The back-to-back, the blowout risk, I think it's a GPP type of a play. I don't feel great about him for cash. Courtney Lee and Pat Connaughton, not interested. At small forward, Mick Beasley, 5,300. He is trending down in the hardest way possible. You can drop him in 12-team fantasy leagues, and you shouldn't be looking at him really here. Evan Turner, Mo Harkless, Troy Williams, Lance Thomas, no. Move on. Al-Farouq Aminu, 5,400. The Chief is an upside guy. He's a tournament guy. It's a good matchup. You can play the matchups with him and try it in tournaments, but you cannot trust him in cash at all. Eddie Davis, no interest. That center, the Cockman, 5,100 for Kylo Quinn because he dropped 43 in that last game, getting more minutes than Enes Kanter occasionally. I think it's a great tournament play. If he gets 25 a night, he will smash that value, but we just don't know if he will get that playing time. That's what makes him a good tournament guy. Well, Nurkic at 6,500. I think Nurk is, I think he's worth a look. And if there was an opportunity to use him in cash, I think this might be it. But I don't feel really good about that. Enes Kanter at 6,500. The minutes have gone back up for Kanter. The production's been fine recently, averaging 32 over the last five. I just don't feel like it's really a great option to go with him. On DraftKings, Lillard, McCollum, Hardaway, O'Quinn, I think all of those guys are cash and tournament options. Nurk at 6,400 is in a good spot as well, while Trey Burke at 53 is a nice upside-y DFS GPP sort of a guy to have a look at. Let's go on to the next one. We've got Brooklyn. We've got the Golden State Warriors. Steph Curry will play. The Warriors are favored by 14, and the total is 230. We've seen the Nets be plucky before against the Clippers. They were really good. How they handled the Warriors at Oracle remains to be seen. Jordan Bell's listed as probable, while Sean Livingston rested in the last game. He should be back. They're not having any sort of DFS impact. At point guard, Steph's at 9,800. Like I said with Lillard, he's not going to need a huge amount of time to put up big minutes. A 50-point game could very easily be coming from Steph, 55 even. I think he's definitely worthwhile looking at. Spencer Dinwiddie at 7,000. I think you can do better. Shawnee Livingston, no. Shooting guard, D'Angelo Russell, 7,300. At 6,300, I'd be on it. At 73, I just think it's a little bit too high. Klay Thompson, no. Caris LeVert, massive game in the last one for LeVert, 48 points. I think that ownership will be very, very high because of that, and therefore I don't think that's repeatable, and I don't think you should be investing in him. At small forward, the Blue Swimmers at 49, Alan Crabb, nope. Kevin Durant, 10,200. Yes, yes, love that for cash. Really strong, strong base, strong floor with 60 upside there for Durant. Love it. Damari Carroll putting up big numbers, but at 6,200, I just think that price takes all the upside away and introduces significant downside. So no, not interested. Jumpin' Joe Harris, Dante Cunningham, Andre Iguodala. Dante Cunningham's the backup center, and he's playing listed as small forward. You don't want to use him regardless, though. At power forward, Dave West, no. Draymond, 8,100. Yeah, tournament for Draymond, not confident in cash. Hollis Jefferson at 57. He played 41, but that was a weird game against the Clippers where the bench was getting significant run. Will he be in the starting lineup? We don't know yet. I don't think we want to really roster him at 5,700, although he does play well against the Warriors. So, sneaky GPP type of guy. Jordy Bell, no thanks. Jarrett Allen at center, 5,300. Centers against the Warriors is never a bet you want to make. So I think it's hard to go there with Allen, while JaVale and Zaza, nah, we can do better than use those guys at center. On DraftKings, Curry, Durant, Draymond, I like all of them for cash and for tournaments. D'Angelo Russell is very appealing over on DraftKings at 6,500, and Dinwiddie at 63 also comes into play there. Rondé at 57, probably a bit priced out of it. The last game of the night, we're looking at the New Orleans Pelicans, the LA Clippers, a really important playoff battle here. The Clippers are favored by 3. The total is a absolute monster, 236.5. Emeka Okafor missed the last game. If he is out, Nick Mirotic will start, and we should be all about Nick Mirotic in that scenario. At point guard, Austin Rivers, 6,300. Rivers is putting up numbers consistently. I love the matchup for him here. He won't be playing at point guard. He'll be playing off the ball, but I think he's a strong cash play. Miloš Teodosic at 4,400. I'm going to leave that alone. Rajon Rondo at 6,500. Rondo, amazingly, putting up good numbers as well. I still don't have the full confidence at that sort of a salary to get on board with Rajon. Ian Clarkson, Darius Thornwell, probably not. At shooting guard, Lou Williams, $8,000 for Lou. I think it's too high. The matchup is good, but I wouldn't want to use that price in cash. Well, Drew Holiday at 8,500, I also think that's too high. It's a big price jump. He's been excellent, but I don't think I'd spend 8,500 on him. The sexy boy, Sean Kilpatrick. He's a minimum salary player, but I just don't think he's going to get enough playing time to be an impact. CJ Williams and Ty Wallace won't play, so there's going to be minutes available. Avery Bradley, the Rooster, out as well. I just don't think the sexy boy gets it done. At small forward, Etuan Moore, no thank you. Darius Miller, minimum salary, that's also a no thank you. And Wes Johnson, another minimum salary? Oh, let's go for a trio of no thank yous. At power forward, the table, Montrezl Harrell at 5,000. That salary is too high to get any value out of him. Toby Harris at 79. I am in on this bloke. He is crushing. 42 over the last five. Dropped 55 against the Nets. Great matchup, all in. Tone Davis, 12.5. How can you go away from Tone Davis? Get involved. Or Nick Mirotic at 6,800. If Okafor's out, I think Mirotic becomes an excellent tournament play with even some cash viability. Check Diallo. If Okafor's out, Diallo had 40 points in the last game. 4,300, you would have to put him into a tournament pool of players. Not necessarily use him, but you would have to consider it. DeAndre Jordan at 7,900. The numbers have been up for Jordan. 41 over the last three. Plays okay against the Pelicans. I don't hate it for in cash situation. I think it's not bad. I'm not sure there's much tournament upside, but it could be used in a cash scenario. On DraftKings, Toby Harris for cash at 75 and Rivers at 58. I love both of those. Davis at 11-6, of course, is always strong, and very much the other stuff holds that we spoke about over on FanDuel. Let's wrap it up. Let's look through the other sites before we go here. On Yahoo for tournaments, Nikola Jokic, Chrissy Paul, The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman, The Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu, Kylo Quinn, Jakob Poeltl. And for cash and tournaments, I like Frank the Tank, I like Milos, I like The Table, I like Fred VanVleet, Dirk Nowitzki, Dennis Smith, Austin Rivers, Benny Simmons, Steph Curry, Joel Embiid, and Jimmy Harden. On Moneyball for tournaments, Embiid, Smith Jr., Hardaway Jr., Nurkic Jr., Trey Burke Jr., Kylo Quinn Jr., Fred VanVleet Jr., and Milos Teodosic Jr. For cash and tournaments, Dwight Powell, Paul Millsap, The Pencil, Harrison Barnes, Austin Rivers, Drew Holiday, CJ McCollum, Kemba Walker, Brad Beal, Toby Harris, Dame Lillard, Steph Curry, Jim Harden, Russell Westbrook and Tone Davis, and on Draft Stars for tournaments, Jokic, Russell, Murray, that's the Blue Arrow, The Baptist, John Collins, Thomas Satoransky, Jarrett Allen, Freddie VanVleet, Jakob Poeltl, Pascal Siakam, and Nerlens Noel. And for cash, we've got Mike Muscala, Milos Teodosic, Kylo Quinn, Trey Burke, Hardaway, Batum, Austin Rivers, CJ McCollum, Toby Harris, Dame Lillard, Joel Embiid, Steph Curry, and Russell Westbrook. If you are listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, go ahead and leave a 5-star rating. Give it a review as well. Something funny, something witty. Just go out there and help support the podcast. You can also find us on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify. And of course, YouTube, where you can watch me. You can see my beard. You can see how it's coming along. You can see how my hair, which is getting a little bit long, trying to grow it a little bit longer at the moment. Go check me out on YouTube over there. Leave a comment, subscribe, give it a thumbs up, and check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network on Twitter at LockedOnNBAnet. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Rashawn Holmes.